All right, it's Chandra with the Contemporary Horsemanship Podcast, and today I'm going to continue talking about the science of horse training, and today's topic is going to be desensitization / habituation. So two different things, very similar. I'm going to tell you the definitions and then why they're different and how do you apply them and how they apply to horses. So first, I want to talk about habituation and the definition of it. So repeatedly causing a given reflex response will result in a reduction of the intensity or probability of the response. And that's called habituation. So habituation is going to be the decrease of the probability or intensity of a reflex response. That's a little bit easier definition of it. So an example of this, and again, I'm using the same books that I've used in the last two podcasts. It's going to be learning and behavior from Paul Chance and behavior analysis and learning from W. David Pierce and Carl D. Cheney, the fourth edition, if that helps you. I don't know. But that's where I'm getting my definitions. And those are the books that I'm reading right now. So the example in, I can't remember which one of those books, but one of those books is two researchers, Seth Sharples and Herbert Jasper, watch the effects of loud noises on cats with an EEG machine, which watches their brainwaves. At first, the cats reacted to the noise, but the reaction declined steadily with each repetition of a sound until that noise had hardly any effect. So that's going to be habituation. That's an example of habituation. We're probably going to be more familiar, especially in the horse world, with desensitization. Usually though, desensitization, or what's coined that, is not that. It could be multiple different things. It could be someone actually doing habituation. It could be someone flooding the horse. So there's other things, and I'm going to talk about those a little bit later, but I want to just get that out of the way that these are the definitions. This is what it is. And that some of the time we're not desensitizing or using habituation, we are flooding. So another scientist, Wagner Bridger, did a similar experiment with babies and heart rate with the same loud noises. So they played a loud noise for a baby, and then over time, the heart rate of the baby would stay the same. It wouldn't produce those like reflexes where they're afraid. They just got used to it. So, I mean, that can happen in your everyday life. Another good example is like living near a train track. You hear the train go by and it might be loud the first couple times, like just outside, or maybe the horn. You hear the horn a couple times and then over time, like it's just not a thing anymore. Same with living close to a road or living in a city. You just kind of get used to those sounds after a while, even if they're played at full blast. That's the key of habituation, is there's no lowering of the sounds to kind of help in that process. So that is important. That's an important distinction between habituation and desensitization. So it would be the train goes by and honks its horn the same as it always does, but you just get used to it and sometimes you don't even hear anymore. So that is habituation. And then there's going to be multiple different examples of that, but it's very important that you know the difference, that it does not lower its intensity. So that's important. In the research, though, they did not say how many repetitions it took before they saw the decline in either experiment. So I am a little bit curious to see how many times it took. Like, was this a long experiment or a short experiment? So just to kind of say, they didn't say in the books. I guess I could have researched it. I'll probably need to do that and look it up, and I'll talk about it in another episode. But I am curious to see how many times it actually takes before like habituation goes into effect. And I do want to talk about a little bit, sometimes habituation does not work. So I'll talk about that a little bit later, but that is an important side note on habituation. So the caveat about habituation is if it is only done once or only a few times, which is why I'm very curious about the studies, which I'm sure they were done multiple, many, 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 many times. So if you're doing what you think is desensitization, which is actually habituation, and then it turns into sensitization or flooding. Those are the terms that we're going to be using. And I want to make sure you understand them before I go kind of down that road, because that's what happens in the horse world all the time. So let me actually tell you what the definition for desensitization is, because I think most of the time we think we're desensitizing and we are not. We are actually using habituation and then from habituation, we're crossing the line into flooding and we're teaching the horse to be helpless. So let's go ahead with desensitization first. So since we already know the habituation, so it's the train or the balloons continue popping or the jackhammers outside all the time, it's at the same level constantly. And sometimes, most of the time, usually, depending on the connections to the sound and the environment and the learned behavior, you or the animal or the horse gets used to that sound. So just by repeated exposure, we get used to that sound and we're habituated to it and we might not even notice it. So that's habituation. The desensitization works on the same principle as habituation, but at less intensity. So that's very important. We increase the intensity in small steps where no reaction, there's no reaction of the animal or the person before moving on. So a good example of this would be just if I'm showing my horse something scary and I understand the difference between habituation and desensitization. So like if I want to teach my horse to be desensitized to gunfire, I'm not going to just go shoot a gun above his head first. That's a really poor choice for you and for the horse. What I would do first is play a recording, maybe at a low level of gunfire, then play a little louder, then get like a cap gun type situation, something that's not a full-on real gun, something that's muffled, and then progressively get closer with that, and then use the whatever gun you're going to be using, like if you're going to do mounted shooting or whatever, and I would start shooting off that gun at a far enough distance that it's not causing a reaction, get closer and closer and closer until you can do it from the back of your horse. So we took like many, many, many steps to desensitize the animal to the end sound, which is you shooting off of their backs if you're doing some kind of mounted shooting or some kind of show or something like that. What we would not do is just continue to shoot from the horse's back. So that's that's the difference, is that if I was using habituation, I would be on the horse and I would just continue shooting on the horse's back over and over and over and over and over again until there's no reaction. That is usually not super likely to do, because two things have to happen. You have to continue doing it over and over again and till there's no reaction. So most of the time, we don't have a ton of time. We can't spend all day long at the barn shooting off a gun. Plus, you know, that's not super practical. Cops are probably going to be called. It's not super practical. Even if it's not a gunfire, it's not super practical to continue doing a stimulus or sound over and over and over and over and over. And then we also have to wait for the animal to not be worried anymore. And the side note to that is that sometimes a lot of people don't know when that's happening. They don't know when the horse has started to relax or started to ignore it or is going in that direction to where you would stop doing it for the day. So those are two very important things. We usually don't have the time or energy or anything like that to do this, the noise repeatedly as many times as it takes. And the other part is not recognizing when the horse is becoming relaxed with that stimulus. So those are two very important things with habituation that we don't realize that we're doing, and we are actually sensitizing instead. So I will talk about that in a second, but that's very important that we know the differences between desensitization and habituation. So in habituation, the loud stimulus happens as it would normally, same distance and volume. You don't do anything when the thing happens. So same thing with the train. When the train goes by, nothing different happens. The conductor continues to honk the horn at the same level. They don't put on the little baby horn when they go by. It's the same horn, same train, probably the same time if it's a train, but it's very consistent in its noise and intensity. That's very important. So back to my example of teaching my horses gunfire. So the example that I just explained is desensitization. So I've gone through all the steps. I've started at a low level. I've brought it up as the horse stays relaxed. They're not running around when I play the gun sounds on my phone, because then if I'm doing that, then there's no sense in me bringing out the cap gun or the BB gun or whatever, because the horse is already afraid at the lower level. So that's very important. That has to be done in steps. So my horses are somewhat desensitized to gunfire because I live in the country and a lot of people shoot guns. So this is going to be an example of habituation. So in habituating my horses to gunfire, they live outside 24/7. I do have neighbors that shoot guns. Luckily for me, it's not super close. So when they do hear the gunfire, it's not like right above them. It's not really close. It's not at such a high level that they're reacting. Now, for my horses, they don't react. But for other horses, they might react because it might be at too high a level. So just because it's far enough away for mine, every animal is different. It might not be far enough for another animal. That is also very important. Each animal has its own threshold. But back to my example, my horses, like, they hear it. It's in the distance and it's very consistent, especially like in the fall during hunting season. Someone's shooting pretty regularly. It's pretty regular and it's at a far enough distance that it's muffled. So that is important. So I've lived here for about 6 years and haven't had any of my horses that long. They haven't been here the whole 6 years. I've had my Mustangs for three or four years. So they've been here the longest. They don't react to the gunfire at all. And it probably has a little bit to do with what I talked about with the sensitization for them. They realize that it wasn't a threat, they don't respond to it, and they've continually kept not responding to it. So over the last few years, they've been exposed to those sounds and they don't do anything about it. They've habituated to it. And it's probably a little bit of desensitization as well, just because, it is further away, but I can't control the sounds, and, you know, so it's not like I can stand out there and make them stop shooting at a certain time. It's just something that happens in the environment and the horses are used to it now. So, I'm assuming it's still an example of habituation. But I don't really have a control over the sounds or the when the, gunfire goes off. So they could shoot for 5 minutes. They could shoot for 30 seconds. I don't know. And depending on who it is and what gun they're using, sometimes they're louder and sometimes they're less loud. So, but it is an example that I have that I don't really have control over. So, since it's just something that happens around and it just happens regularly, they're used to it. And then as recently the 4th of July, when fireworks get shot off, they don't really seem to care because they've habituated to the sounds of gunshots for so long that it's kind of the same thing for them. They hear the firework, which is louder and closer, and there is light there's not light with the gunfire. So they have generalized that, luckily for me and for them. But when the fireworks go off, they have no reaction. I think in their mind, it's the same thing as the gunfire and they're already habituated to it. So it might not be the best, example of habituation because they are at a lower level and they're at a level that like comes and goes, but I guess it would be the same thing for the train. Like the train is not going to be necessarily a low level, like the horn's not going to change in the distance, but you hear the train and the train comes by, but it might come by at different times and for different amounts of times. So I still think that's going to be an example of habituation. Where you get into the sensitization is when it's too intense. So, and that's going to be for the same for the both of my examples. So again, gunfire that is too close, too loud, or a train that is too close and too loud. Most of the time in both of these examples, they're not going to be super close and super loud because most horse farms are not built right next to train tracks. They're probably a little distance away from them. And most people don't allow others to shoot right next to their horses. It's usually a little bit away from them. So that is important because if you are trying to habituate a horse to something and it's too close and too much, you can actually sensitize the horse to something. So, like I said earlier, if it's only done once or a few times, or escape and avoidance is successful, sensitization occurs instead. So we have to be very, very careful with this. Okay, so the dangers of habituation are quite a few. Like I was mentioning with both my examples, it can easily make the animal become sensitized versus desensitized. So we want to make sure that we're doing it properly and that escape avoidance does not happen, because when it does happen, you've gone over a threshold of your animal. And then when it's successful, the horse has learned a different response to this stimulus. So not only is it not working, but you're making the problem worse. So if I'm desensitizing, what I think of I'm doing is desensitizing my horse to the stick and string, like in natural horsemanship. And I'm tossing it up over their back, and the horse gets terrified and pulls away. What is happening? I'm now sensitizing that horse to the stick and string and taught him an avoidance behavior. So that's something we definitely do not want. They're going to see that stick and string and then now know that they could run away from it. So, even though habituation sounds simple, repeated exposure to a loud sound will produce habituation of the startle response. That doesn't mean that the fear is necessarily gone or that the animal isn't afraid anymore. The startle is just repressed. So suppressed. The startle response is suppressed. So same thing with like humans or anything. Other animals can happen. So doesn't necessarily mean that it's gone and the fear is gone. It's just that you don't outwardly show it. So I've talked about this in other episodes, but I've been afraid of fire alarms or just alarms in general my entire life. So, and I do understand what they're for. Unlike horses or other animals, they're not going to understand why loud noises are happening or like why gunshots or the train going by. They don't understand why it's happening. So that is a big key element, is that I do understand, but it still worries me. It still bothers me and I don't like it. I still don't like it even as an adult human. So, instead of being habituated to it, I have a couple different examples. So first example is when you're a kid and when you're in school and you're like a little kid in school, they usually do the fire drill like the first day. So not only was I just afraid to be in school because it's a big deal for like a little kid and, you know, there's a lot of things going on. So I was already in an environment that I wasn't comfortable in. And then this alarm goes off and that, you know, that startles you, that makes you jump, that worries you. And then so it's like a lot of stuff, a lot of loud sounds and things to process all at once. So that kind of traumatized me from the beginning. So there was a lot of things going on. So even though I was in the classroom and the alarm goes off like for a while until everybody gets out, and then you go outside and you stand there and you wait, and you know, it's supposed to be not that big of a deal. Like no one's chasing me, I'm not being attacked, but it's still scary because it is loud and you don't know when it's going to happen. So that is an important part of it, but it would still keep going off. It doesn't just go off for 2 seconds and then stop. So it's not just like that balloon popping and then stopping. It does go off for an extended amount of time. So like you should habituate to that. Also over time, I've obviously gone to school the whole 12 years of it and some more after that. And I still don't like it. I still don't want it to happen, but my startle response is somewhat suppressed. So depending on the intensity of it, like I might not jump, like it might not happen, and I still understand that what is going on, but I still don't like it. So it's not like So I actively will avoid like being near the alarm. Like I don't want to be close to it because I know like at some point it could go off. So I do like staying away from it so that I can minimize the noise level of that. Even though that I understand that businesses and things have that for safety reasons and they go off sometimes and it's not a big deal. I'm still like sensitized to it. So, and depending on the situation and the intensity of it, like the startle response might be suppressed, it might not be, depending on how close I am to it. So over time though, what should have been happening is that I am in school or somewhere and alarms go off, I hear the alarms, I understand the alarms, but I still don't like them. So it could be very similar and very much more intense for animals who don't understand what sounds are for or anything like that, or have a negative experience with them or negative, something bad happened attached to that sound. So The degree of habituation and the rate of which it occurs depends on the loudness of the sound, variations in the quality of the sound, the number of the times the sound occurs, and the time interval between repeated exposures to the sound and other variables. So this is the scientific explanation of what I just kind of rambled on about, is the habituation has to be very consistent all the time. That's why it works with the train. A train probably comes on a schedule. He goes by, he honks his horn, he goes away. It's very like consistent. The consistency is the part with my example with the fire alarm that is lacking. So I don't know when it's going to happen. It could happen multiple times. It could happen never. Like, that's the variability part of it. That is scary. And the difference in the sounds, that is also scary. So, like, if you have ever been in a Walmart when the fire alarm goes off, it's very low-key. Like, it's like it kind of resembles like a car backing up. Like, it's like a beep, beep, and then it says, and then it's a person, like a Siri voice that says, please evacuate, please remain calm, please stop your thing, drop your things and evacuate the building. And then it's like a bing, bing, bing. It's loud, so you can hear it, but it's not like a horrible screeching fire alarm. So like, I've heard the one at Walmart go off and it's really not a big deal. So I'm not afraid of that one because it's not awful like the other ones. But on the flip side, other ones, like I was in a mall when it was going off once, and they do not have a pleasant fire alarm. It's very loud. It's very screechy, and they were having like an issue with it. So like, it wasn't even like a test. It was just like going off the whole time. And that one was awful. So that was the one that I'm very used to in like schools and stuff. And like, I would have anxiety about it. I couldn't sit close to it. If I knew like it was going to be, like, I think they had it like every month or so where they would like test it. So if I knew like this month was new or they hadn't tested it yet, and I was just like, I couldn't do anything else because I was like, is it going to go off? Is it going to go off? I don't know if it's going to go off. Like, I didn't want to sit next to it. It was bad. And so that can definitely happen with animals, is there's different variations of the alarms. There's different intensities. It can go off at different times. Like, so if you're not being very consistent, like I said earlier with the gunshot thing, if I'm shooting over and over and over and over again, that it's just a constant sound. If I live in a place where there's gunshots all the time, like I kind of do now, it's not a big deal because gunshots happen. Like, if I go outside and hear some gunshots right now, it's not a big deal. Someone's probably just target practicing at their house. So, but it's at a low enough level and it's not like, it's somewhat predictable. So it's not as intense and variable as the fire alarm is. So what we need to do for the horses is not be so intense and variable. We need to be very predictable and do it at a very low level. So that's why desensitizing is very important. So if I go back to my example of what desensitizing is, it's at the low level. But what's in mainstream horse training, and especially natural horsemanship right now, is not desensitization. It is habituation that has gone awry and gone into flooding. So let me go into what flooding is really quick, and then I want to go into the examples and then what we can do to fix that. So flooding is a prolonged exposure therapy, so full immersion training technique that the animal, that you cannot escape. It is very stressful. It becomes learned helplessness, and or like shut down horse or person is very similar. So this can also do the opposite and sensitize the animal or traumatize the animal and wreck the bond that you have. I got this information from Adrienne Farcelli from pethelpful.com. She had an article on there about flooding, because it does not have a definition in my books about flooding, but it's too much exposure therapy. It's too much all at once. So I've talked about this before, but like, if you're terrified of spiders and your therapist puts a bunch of spiders on you, like, you're going to freak out and you might not necessarily show it or move or thrash around, but you're not going to like it because there's spiders on you. And you're not going to like your therapist, the room you were in, the chair that you were at, the building that it was at. You're going to attach all these negative associations to that situation. So with flooding, like, it usually doesn't work. And when people say it does work, it's because that animal has become shut down or has gone into a state of learned helplessness. So, like if you're being strapped down and spiders are being put on you, like you could fight it, but that's not going to help you. And the spiders are still there. So eventually you'll just stop and wait until someone takes them off of you. But still, again, you're not going to enjoy it. You're not going to like it. It's still going to be awful. And now you're going to attach all these other associations to it. So same thing with horses. It's the flooding part is when they cannot escape. They cannot control the outcome. And so they just give up. So that's where the learned helplessness comes in. They learn to be helpless when they cannot change the outcome of their environment or what's happening to them. So like there's an experiment with dogs that there was like a little fence, and if the dogs jumped over the fence, they wouldn't be shocked anymore. So in like a little room, the floor was like would be turned on and it would shock the dogs. So the dog would be in this room, the floor would start shocking them. It could jump over this gate and escape the shock. If there wasn't a gate, then the animal could not escape. And after many repetitions of the floor just shocks the animal, even when they like a gate was put back up or like a gateway to get out, the animal doesn't leave because it feels like it cannot. It's learned that it doesn't matter what it does, it cannot escape what's happening to it. So that's what happens with the horses. It doesn't matter what the horse does, it cannot escape, and so they just give up. But that's when shutdown horses, where they just like the lights are on and no one's home, they're just like shutting you out, shutting the world out. That's going to be very similar, but it can come back. Like if the intensity of the stimulus is that intense, the animal can still, I mean, the animal is still afraid. So in learned helplessness and shutdown, the animal's still afraid. Same with the person. Like there's still feelings going on in there. This is nothing on the outside. And then if the intensity is strong enough, like you, that you can have your explosion. So I've talked about shutdown horses before and learned helplessness before. If it's intense enough or if it's some kind of trigger, like whatever stimulus it might be, you can get a horse that just blows up out of nowhere, especially when you thought they were quiet and would go along with a lot of things, but they were actually just shut down the whole time and they were just not like pretending that it wasn't happening. And then when the stimulus gets too intense, they blow up. So that is really important to know those definitions and know when that is happening. The flooding does the opposite. Because it sensitizes you and it can traumatize you. And then again, you're whatever it's associating you, the environment with. So just like with the balloons earlier, the very first like definition example that I had was they can become more fearful and connect other things to the events that are now triggers. So now let me go into my example real quick so this makes sense. So in natural horsemanship, you're usually taught to desensitize your horse on a lead rope with a halter, usually like a rope halter, so that you can control them a little bit more. Usually what you're going to start with is like your lead rope or your stick and string, like a lunge whip, and then you kind of graduate on to saddle pads, blankets, saddles, a rider, tarps, flags, whatever it might be. And I've definitely done this in the past. But like, you know, without knowing any better, this is desensitizing. The horse is going to be calm with it. It's going to be fine. Like they're overreacting, all these words that made the horse wrong and me right. But really what we were doing is using habituation very poorly, crossing the line into flooding, because within habituation, the animal can escape. So if the train goes by, like, and the horses are in the field, they can run around in the field. They're not tied next to the fence of the train. So same thing with my horses. They're just out in their field. They're grazing, doing whatever. Gunshots happen. I'm not holding on to them and forcing them to be in a certain place when they happen. Same thing with people. If I live in a busy city, like I'm not being trapped in a room and I'm kidnapped now, and then all these loud noises happen, or I cannot leave my house or whatever, I can still move about my day and be free to do whatever, but there's just more noises than there was before. So even with, well, somewhat within my, I think there's a lot more to my fire alarm story than I actually realized, but I might have felt like I couldn't leave because you can't leave school when you're a kid, obviously. So there's a little bit of probably flooding going on there because you can't leave. You can't just leave school, you know, every time you think the fire alarm is going to go off. Like when you're an adult, it's different because if I'm at work, I'm not supposed to leave, you know, but I could if I wanted to, or I could go to lunch, or I could step out of the building, or I could do whatever. But when you're a kid, like, you don't have those freedoms. Like, you have to stay in the room, you have to be with your teacher, you have to listen to instructions. So I think that's definitely a part of it, is flooding was happening there. It wasn't necessarily habituation, it was flooding. So but anyways, back to my example. So let's say I have my horse and I'm going to just desensitize him to a lunge whip. That's going to be my first step. So what you're usually supposed to do is hold on to the lead rope, like a few feet from the snap. I start tossing the whip up over the withers, up on the back. And let's say my horse starts moving. So it's really important that you pay attention to the horse's body language and stuff, like I talk about all the time. Most of the time you're going to see signs that the animal is not comfortable before they start moving. So I want to talk about that really quick, and then I'll go back into my example. But the horse is going to be tense. He might be tight in his face and his muzzle. His ears might be not moving. They might be moving a lot. Just a general tenseness in the horse's body. The head and neck's going to be up. They might move their head to look at like the whip a little bit differently, to kind of get a better look at it. But you're going to see a lot of tenseness in the face probably the most. So wrinkles above the eyes, wrinkles on the lips, that nerve on the face, like you can see it in the muzzle, tight lips, tight neck, just tight muscles is going to be your first reaction and probably your most common one. So that is important. I want to just have a little side note to notice that. Notice that those behaviors are there because they're going to happen before the horse moves. So that's very important. But for the sake of the example, my horse is going to start moving. So my horse has started moving. I'm still with the whip. So now he's on the halter and lead rope. He's very clearly showing me, because he's passed all those other signs, that he is not comfortable with what I'm doing, but he cannot escape. So I'm holding on to his halter and lead rope. He cannot escape. I'm going to continue tossing the whip up over his back. He's going to keep walking. And what you're supposed to be doing with these exercises is continue to do that until the horse stands still. So the horse has tried to stand still. The horse has tried to move at this point, and nothing, like the only thing that gets this to stop is when he stops and stands still. So does that mean the horse is relaxed? No. Just means that the horse had tried to escape. It did not work. What did work was standing still and kind of bottling all that up. That's where your learned helplessness comes in. That's where your shutdown horse comes in. So they have learned that walking away doesn't work, backing up doesn't work, being tight doesn't work. It's just once you stand still. So like by being tight, I mean like communicating that to the person. The person didn't notice. The horse tried to move. They didn't pay attention that they were afraid at that point, and they just continue to do it. So through that process, you were taught in natural horsemanship to ignore all the other things your horse does. Is he bucking, rearing, rolling around, pulling back on you? Doesn't matter what the horse is doing. You're supposed to continue following them and continue putting the lead rope or the whip on the horse or whatever it is that you're using until they stop responding. So that is going to be flooding. So that's been pawned off as desensitization. I thought it was desensitization for a very long time. I used to use it on my horses. I do not do it anymore. It's not desensitization. It's flooding. The animal has tried all these things and they cannot get escape. And so they will either be sensitized more or they will shut down. So they will learn. And this is different because it depends on the trainer or whoever is doing this to the horse's skills, because they could stop with the whip when the horse is moving, and now the horse has learned to move, so there's going to be sensitization there. You could have someone who's pretty good at natural horsemanship, which is not necessarily good in this particular example, because they do have good timing, but they don't understand exactly what they're doing to the horse. So as soon as the horse stops and stops moving. They take the whip away. Then they give the horse a second to think about it. They do it again. The horse doesn't move. They take it off. They've taught that horse to internalize it and to shut down. So that doesn't necessarily mean, again, just like my examples and my definitions, doesn't mean the horse isn't afraid. They've just internalized it. So same thing with the spiders. I can't get away. There's nothing I can do. So I'm just going to sit here and wait until they go away, essentially. So it's that freeze response. There's flight, fight, and freeze. The horse is freezing. So you're not seeing the other behaviors because right now in that example, the other behaviors are not working. So that's my little spiel about that. It's not actually desensitizing. It's flooding and teaching the horse something that is not good. You don't want the horse to do that. Now, there, I have seen other trainers do it differently. So if Warwick Schiller is one of these. I've talked about him multiple times. He used to do it the old way. I used to do it the old way. And he is doing something that is different. It is not flooding. So he will probably have the horse on still in a halter and lead rope. And then let's say we're still using the whip. What he's going to do is first make sure that the horse is comfortable where it is right now. Then if he starts to bring the whip up, if he notices those signs that I was talking about, high head and neck, tense body, horse looking at it weird, he's going to stop and see and stop what he's doing and show the horse that he sees that he's worried. So it's now not habituation that's gone into flooding because my horse cannot escape. It is now desensitization. So just like we said earlier, the definition of desensitizing is that the intensity is less. So we've started to move the whip. The horse is kind of saying, I'm not sure about that. And then we stop it there. So he goes a step further because he stops it and is trying to show the horse that he notices that he's worried about it. And that's a whole nother thing, but which is a good thing, not a bad thing. But so he's not necessarily like lifting the rope or lifting the whip and keeping it at that low place, which would still be the desensitizing. So he's picking up the whip, the horse is showing that he's a little bit worried and he kind of keeps moving it there until the horse kind of relaxes a little bit. Then he stops. So that would be a form of desensitizing. But what he does is even a step better is that he picks it up, notices that the horse is worried, stops, and then waits till he's not worried and then starts again. So I prefer that method. But yeah, so that's going to be your desensitizing. So I'm not saying that specific. If you're seeing someone toss a whip over a horse, it doesn't mean it's necessarily flooding. It's how they approach it. It's just if you're holding them and just making it go over their back, that would be borderline flooding. If they're paying attention to the signs and going slowly, it could be desensitization. There's other stuff that I will talk about later to do instead of desensitizing, because desensitizing can take a long time. There's lots of little pieces, just like what I said with the gunshots. I mentioned like four different things, like different steps with multiple steps within them. Desensitization can take a long time. That is absolutely true. But there's also counterconditioning, which I will talk about. I'm just going to give you the definition and I'll talk about it a little bit later. But counterconditioning is essentially you're going to counter-condition an animal, the horse, to something that previously was not good, like didn't have a positive meaning to it, to a neutral meaning. So you're countering what it already thinks, essentially. So one example, my horse doesn't like being fly sprayed. Like he'll stand there, but he doesn't like it. I'm going to counter-condition him to the fly spray. So when, like, I'm going to first lower the intensity. So I'm not going to just go fly spray him. I'm going to fly spray out to the side. Once that, like, let's say I sprayed the bottle, I give him a treat, spray the bottle, give him a treat, bring a little bit closer, same thing, spray the bottle, give him a treat a little bit closer till I can spray him, give him a treat, spray him, give him food. So every time that bottle sprays, he gets food. So I'm counter conditioning the meaning of that spray bottle. So that's a little bit of a side note. That's how I prefer to do things with positive reinforcement. Just like I say every time. I do some desensitizing as well though, and inadvertently some habituation just, you know, in the environment, but you just want to make sure that the horse isn't going over threshold and the horse isn't being flooded. So that's really important. But I do want to mention one thing about desensitizing is desensitizing can only change the fear to a neutral reaction. You aren't bothered, but you don't love it either. So that's an important thing about desensitizing and why I like counter conditioning. The desensitizing is just going to make it to where, like, you're okay with it, but it's not your favorite thing in the world. With counter conditioning, you again bring that thing to neutral, but from there I can pair it to something the animal likes, and just I can recondition it at that point. So the counter conditioning is the process of bringing something they don't really like to a neutral. From there I can condition it to something that they like. So after a while they hear this squirt of the fly spray bottle, and that means food's going to come. So I've conditioned it to mean something else. So again, with the desensitization, it's you're not bothered, but you don't love it. I can then condition them with positive reinforcement to actually like it. And that takes many steps. And that's why I'm going to talk about it in a whole nother episode. So this one isn't horrifically long, but yeah, I'll talk about conditioning things later on in its own episode. So a couple little things that I have to talk about. So the last couple things, noticing, I talked about going over threshold. I've talked about that before. You want to see the horse being worried so that the horse doesn't go over threshold while you are desensitizing. So looking away, again, being tight, definitely moving away is a horse that's over threshold. So, when you're desensitizing, you need to know where your horse's threshold is. That's going to be the tightness. That's pretty much it. So if I'm desensitizing, let's say to the whip again, and I see that my horse is getting tight, I want to stop and be like, I see that you're worried about this, and I'll stop it, and then I'll wait for the horse to relax and start again. Or you can just keep it at that low level. Don't go past it. It's very important that you don't go past that level and over the threshold. So when these thresholds are ignored, it definitely can get worse. And then that's where you get the explosions from horses because you didn't notice the horse's threshold. So like in my example, most people don't notice when the horse is tight and tense or looking at something differently. They definitely notice when the animal is moving, like they start moving away from the whip. That's a horse that's already over threshold. But if that's not working, the horse might explode at that point, which a lot of people are like, my horse just came out of nowhere, exploded. And that's where you get the running away, the rearing, the bucking, whatever. And then on the flip side, you can also get a horse that just shuts down, disassociates, and just stops responding. So there's two very flip sides to that. But going over threshold is the first kind of stop on either exploding or disassociating. So that's very important that you know where your horse's thresholds are. I talked about them a little bit before. I mean, again, I'll probably make a whole episode on that because I've been talking almost an hour. I probably should chill, but I could talk an hour on thresholds too. So the last thing that I want to talk about is horses can be sensitized to its entire environment. So that's not good. We don't want that. But it's very possible and definitely something that happens just with horses, especially if it's not a super natural environment. Obviously, this isn't a natural environment for horses, but a horse that is stalled a lot, a horse that doesn't have access to its friends or to grazing, it's going to definitely not help them relax, and then they can be sensitized to everything. So a horse that's really fearful, just like first, if the horse isn't getting its needs met, I mean, obviously it can be very easy to sensitize a horse at that point. So if they're not with their friends, they're not grazing, they're not getting time to move and exercise, they can get wound up really quickly, either by fear or just anxiety or just needing to move. But you can definitely get a horse that's sensitized to a lot of different things. And a good example of that is those horses that live in stalls or don't have opportunities to socialize or graze and do horse things. Everything's going to be exaggerated with those horses, but then usually they're kept to where they're ridden or they're worked at certain times, and like they can definitely respond to things in a higher sensitized way because they feel sensitized and then their environment is. So same thing with like the Mustangs, like their human world is so different for them that everything is scary in the beginning. They're sensitized to everything. So like the stalled horse example, it doesn't necessarily need to be everything. It could be certain things. But like when I used to ride show horses, they would be afraid of like the trash can moved a couple inches. So like my Mustangs would definitely do that. But there was so many new things for them, like that was expected. But for a horse that lived in a stall and saw people every day, the trash can being moved was like, okay, why are you worried about that? But the horse is sensitized to everything in their environment, mostly because their needs aren't being met. But if they're worried or scared about anything at all, and then it keeps, you know, your triggers keep getting stacked, it can definitely sensitize a horse to its entire environment. So even though it's seen it a million times, he's still afraid. Doesn't matter if he's seen a trash can every day for their entire life, the second it moves, or he thinks it moves, or it's windy or whatever, that causes reaction, and it's because the horse has been sensitized to environment. So same thing with the Mustangs in the beginning. It was, I couldn't touch them at all. I could only touch them with one hand. If you held something, or if I bent down, or if I moved, like all those things were all different. Like they were just very on edge, very sensitized to things. So that is an important thing to think about. If your horse just cannot relax, it's sensitized to something in the environment or multiple things in the environment. Kind of figure out how to get that horse to relax, because especially in our modern, the way we care for horses, like there's sometimes not a lot of opportunities for them to relax, like to actually lay down and sleep, to be with other horses, like, and then that kind of just compounds itself. If it's in a stall and it doesn't feel comfortable, then it doesn't sleep, and then it's more worried about its environment, and then it gets spooked, and then its rider gets scared, and it pulls on it, and it's like this big massive circle of bad things. So it's very important to get the horse's needs met, let it be a horse, and then do the training the right way. So hopefully that wasn't too confusing, and I went into sensitization and habituation, where it can go to with flooding, and kind of where things are like in the horse world and what they actually are. They're not like, that's not desensitizing, it's flooding. So hopefully that made things a little bit clearer and wasn't super confusing. And next week, I might talk about classical conditioning next week. I think I said I was going to do that this week, but I can probably talk about conditioning, because I want to talk about classical conditioning and counter conditioning and stuff like that. So I'll probably talk about that next time and keep going through my little science rampage, because it's very interesting, and it kind of connects all the things, like why we do things a certain way with horses, what works with horses, what doesn't. I like it a lot, and I think more people need to know the science behind it. So, all right, well, hopefully that helps.